The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Lauren Knight Hughes, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today, ma'am?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great today. A little tired, but only because I'm weaning off of caffeine a little bit.
We got to meet, now it's probably been a couple at the Healing Humanity, the Austin meetup, and it was really cool. I got to hear some of your story. I've seen your podcast a lot. I really love like the content you have with the debates and different things. It's incredibly interesting. And then when I heard you starting posting kind of carnivore content, that's when I got more interested in your podcast. And I really appreciate your approach to the carnivore lifestyle and being, in my opinion, like, I guess maybe less of a zealot and a little bit more pragmatic about it. And so I kind of wanted to have you on to maybe you could tell us like a little bit of your story background, how you came across the carnivore diet, like, you know, how long have you been living this lifestyle, and what are the benefits that you've experienced? And in addition to that, you know, why do you think it's important to share this information?
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I do try to communicate how I feel about carnivore, which is like, yeah, I don't really buy into the whole rah-rah of anything, really. A lot of the times I tend to try to like beat to take my own path, I guess. And I came across this platform, I guess I shouldn't call it platform, this lifestyle, probably four years ago, somewhere around there. And yeah, my friend at the time, well, still one of my best friends, he at the time was trying to cure tinnitus, which tinnitus is like the ringing in the ears. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know anything about carnivore at all. Like, I didn't know anything. I think Ken Berry's channel was like 100-something thousand, maybe fewer than that. And so he was trying it, and he and I kind of just did everything together. So I just tried it. It wasn't weird to me because I came from a background of having an eating disorder for basically my whole life. So I was always really weird and strict and extreme with food. So I gave it a shot because he was saying he felt so good with it. And the hard part for me was eating enough food because I had come from like decades, like literally 2 decades, not that quite that long, but probably 15 years of just constantly dieting, as so many do in America. And yeah, I came across it and I did it very strict, hardcore for 1 month just to see what happened. And I never ate more food ever. And I never felt better. I ended up needing only like 6 hours of sleep a night, easily, just comfortably. And my entire body composition changed. So I became leaner, but more, I retained my muscle. I was a trail runner at the time too. So I was running like 14 miles a weekend on a trail in Colorado. So like uphill vertical. And it was just insane how good I felt. So that was kind of my introduction to it. And yeah, like I said, the eating disorder stuff just really just took over. It dominated my life, having an eating disorder. So to me, eating this much food was super foreign. Eating this much food but not feeling bloated or feeling like I actually lost 10 pounds in that month of body fat. It just, my body composition changed. So that was when I was like, oh, everything I know is backwards. That was my intro.
Yeah, that's what is very interesting to me about the carnivore lifestyle is that it kind of destroys all these supposed dietary concepts and paradigms. It completely shatters and eradicates. It makes, they're provably false because we know that if we eat a high fat animal based diet, like calories in a very real way aren't existent. you know, because all calories are different. And the way that an animal-based caloric intake is metabolized is like has nothing to do with counting calories. When I was in college, you know, I was always I was kind of like a musclehead and I worked out a lot and trained and I read a ton about, you know, health, nutrition, and diet. And I remember in my biology class in college. And I remember the professor, they showed us this video and it was like one of these charcoal briquette, you know, stoves. And it was in the middle of this Olympic track. And they put like 4 dozen sugar-coated jelly donuts on there, right? And they lit it on fire. And they said, this is, I don't know, 4,000 calories. And this is the way your body, this is how your body consumes these calories. And at the time, I was doing Atkins, you know, and I read Atkins' book. And I'm like, well, this is patently false. Like, you know, if you ate 4,000 calories of jelly donuts, like in one shot, they wouldn't just like burn off in your body. You know what I mean? And that's what's, you know, and that was 20 some years ago or whatever, 25 years ago, 26 years ago. And, you know, now we're seeing this kind of like movement. And I believe the movement certainly isn't a fad, like with a lot of these diets and with this hack and that hack and the pink, I saw Callie Means on Rumble, like pitching this pink salt hack. It's exactly like Ozempic if you take pink salt every morning. You know, it's like all this weird, trendy fad type stuff. But what's really cool about the carnivore lifestyle is it's incredibly simple and it's sustainable. And then when you meet these people, you know, like yourself, that have these like massive type of issues, whether it's an eating disorder or whether it's just a depression or mental imbalance or morbid obesity or whatever. And to watch one particular certain way of eating that has the potential to literally like allow your body to heal itself, it's incredibly fascinating to me. And why I'm so kind of fired up about it and excited about it is it just gives you a tool or an opportunity to present somebody with this idea of like, well, what if you just ate a high fat red meat diet? And what if by doing that within 30 to 60 days, you could start having serious positive benefits with the potential that within a year, like your chronic disease or ailments would be gone. Like if that was the case, is that something that you would think about, consider, try?
I mean, it's incredible. Like I think that's one of the reasons why it's gotten so much attention. I mean, it works. And now I don't want to say it works for everything because that's a blanket statement. And I've never had everything. I'm not like somebody who can, I can't claim that. But I do think that it makes sense when you step back and for me at least, and I look at just sort of how I think the world works. And I really believe in what one would call the law of nature. One of my best friends actually started talking about this and I didn't really get it, but now I do get it more. One of the components of it is just like nature kind of will take its course and nature is going to overpower. And like nature is sort of, I don't know, the defining law, if you will. And when I think about our bodies, like we are part of nature. And so for us to continuously try to distort the natural course of things with fake food, which is ultra processed food, and try to pretend like that's going to give us the right nutrition, then we're going to get really weird, distorted results. And then we try to further distort that with, you know, pharmaceuticals, which I don't think all pharmaceuticals are bad. You know, I think they're really good in a lot of ways, right? I think all of us kind of think that. But we're kind of fooling ourselves here when we don't remember that we have evolved for literally years. And we we have what we brought with us, which is our bodies and our minds and everything. And it can do a lot of incredible things, I think, when we give it the right ammo to do so. And in my experience, it's less of putting things in. It's more removing, actually.
Yes, sure.
You know, and so it's like, it's all here. Nature gave us a lot of what we need, all of what we need, you know, and are we adding on things to make it more complicated than it needs to be? Sometimes I think the simplest answer is the right answer a lot of the times. And it seems pretty simple to me to just eat real food that's like, you know, God given to us and comes from the earth or whatever. And, you know, the rest will kind of make itself work.
Well, and you bring up a really good point. And I think you have a very interesting perspective from what you do for work, you know, in marketing, where you can clearly recognize marketing, you know, and you can see that basically all of these things and health food stores and all of these different hacks and tricks and trends and vitamins and supplements, they're all being bombarded at us. They're all marketing campaigns. And I mean, marketing is just a business word for propaganda in a sense, you know. So in a larger way, it is propaganda to get you to be enamored with a product so that you buy it because it's going to fix your problem. And, you know, when you start seeing that, and I think the main reason carnivore gets so much hate and pushback is because it can't be monetized. Like, it's the exact same reason why there hasn't been any type of large carnivore studies, because there's no monetary incentive by any monolithic transnational megacorporation to truly study it so that they can figure out a way to monetize it to sell us something.
Well, there's this thing in sales. So I'm a sales director, to your point, and I've always been in sales. Here's the other thing that's fascinating about this too, just to add a little context to why I think I agree with a lot of what you said, as I've been in sales my whole life, but I've also done media relations, which honestly is very much like sales. So I've pitched and gotten stories with the LA Times and USA Today and like big stories, you know? And you sort of, you know, when you're working with those types of, just in those systems, right? Like sales or PR, whatever, even content creation, like you recognize that everything is sales. And so, when I was doing media relations, this was kind of my first insight into like, huh, this is weird. I was 26, I think. And I was just put in this position to do media relations and just figure it out. And so, of course, I called the biggest ones out there. And I'm not going to name names, but I ended up getting these really big stories placed with a few of these organizations about the company I was at. And anyways, as I pitched these stories, not one journalist did any background check on anything I had to say. It was just what I said was the story. And I gave the good story. It was a good story. It was an honest, it was a true story. But I was surprised that there was no like, hey, can I see this? Can I see that? Can we cross-reference? Can we do any of this? It became a headline story based off of what a 26-year-old said. And the reason was it was a catchy, good story. It was a good story. I had a great sales pitch. And that was really surprising to me, because it wasn't one time, it was 2, 3, 4, 5 times that I pulled that off, and big outlets. And so to me, I just realized like, wow, that is so interesting, because everybody, we're all just speedy trying to get things out there, put out the content for the click, for the view, whatever. And so it goes back to, And nothing's wrong with that, right? Like, as far as just trying to get good stories out there. But when you go back to food, it's like important to remember that that's a thing there too. Like, somebody like me could create a protein bar where they want to sell the thing and it seems like a good way to make money and a good living and they have a family, but maybe they don't have the information that would be, you know, maybe they don't have the education or the understanding or the experience with food that would give them the ability to promote a product that is supposed to be healthy, but they can put that on the label because that's what you can do. You can label that as selling it. You put the bright colors, you do all of that. So they're just same as the media. They're just kind of throwing it out there and wanting people to consume it. And again, nothing wrong. I'm not hating on anybody for that. I'm a sales director. Like, I totally get it. But we as consumers are bombarded with that. And so because we see it so often, as goes advertising, when you see something more often, you believe it as true. And that's just how the mind works. You know, sometimes a belief isn't necessarily true. It's just a thought or a thing that's been said a lot. And so, yeah, red meat, we thought for years, was terrible for us because that's what a lot of people and entities said. But has there actually really been full testing on that? Some would argue yes. A lot would argue no. And right now, it's unclear. So we cannot say that red meat is all bad for us, though other people did say that. It's just something that people said a lot and it became a truth. You know what I mean? That's the kind of thing that I'm thinking about in this kind of context.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that you mentioned that's very important is we are bombarded by this marketing, right? This propaganda marketing. And just like you're saying, I mean, everybody's in business. Nobody is blaming anybody for doing this, but because we are bombarded, right? And then we've also largely been sold this idea of low fat and these other different elements that affect our mind, right? That make us have more brain fog, to be more susceptible to suggestion and ideas and marketing, right? It just lowers our cognitive ability. And what's very interesting about that is where a high-fat animal-based diet kind of restores your cognitive ability, breaks the brain fog, it makes you less susceptible to marketing. You know, so it's like it's kind of like a self-reinforcing mechanism. Like if you eat this particular way, it's going to improve your mental function. Your improved mental function and lack of brain fog is going to make you able to kind of sift through the noise and recognize the marketing and kind of reject the drip and the bombardment. So that way you can, and this is where, you know, where I repeat myself as far as this is why I'm kind of inspired to have people like you share your story, to share my story, and to kind of give people hope when it comes to just the state of our culture, not just America, but is society in general, as we move from an agrarian society to this industrial and maybe even now post-industrial society where there's been mass development and large deposits of people living in concrete jungles and stacked and packed high and deep, right? So that they can't like have their bare feet touch the grass, right? And they live in a completely synthetic environment. It really makes sense. Like it makes sense if you grew up in a city or maybe you're attracted to a city and you live on the sixth floor, right? And you put your trash in a trash bag and you put it in this little thing outside your door and some person or service or whatever picks up your trash, and then you go to the store and, well, the package says it's healthy, and you buy this pre-packaged ultra-processed food in this package, and the marketing says it's healthy, right? And what you don't realize is, like, you are, in a really kind of a way, you're in this matrix. You're in this artificial matrix where almost every component of your life is synthetic. You know, you walk down the stairs or you take the elevator and you walk outside and you're in this concrete jungle. And thankfully, you know, there's a sanitation department that comes and picks up all the trash and that disappears. And, you know, you have these stores with these stock shelves with these bright labels and you can kind of go in there and in a very sanitary way, select what food you're going to eat. And what it does is it's disconnected us, you know, it's disconnected us from creation, from the ground, from where our food comes from. Like, you know, and there's, you talk to enough people and like, there are people that don't even realize like where meat comes from. Like, you know, well, I buy it at Walmart or whatever. And they don't realize like, well, no, that was a cow. Like a month ago, it was mooing, you know? And so, but all of that, it might not be this greater conspiracy thing, but it's just as culture has shifted from agrarian to industrial, it's created so much artificialness that people almost don't recognize what natural and real is.
Yeah. I mean, I think what carnivore allowed me to do was I had options, you know, like now I have options because I have perspective. So I'm very much like all about the more like, I don't really look at carnivore as like a carnivore diet. It is about food, but to your point, it's not just about food. It's really a perspective shift and a new way to like approach everything in life. Because, you know, as an example, I for so many years have always wanted to have diet sodas. Well, I actually hate Diet Coke, but like Diet Dr. Pepper and, you know, Coke Zeros and all those things. And I've done that since I don't even know, like when they came out, because it's like cutting calories and it's a great way to get sweetness and stuff like that. And it literally took me years to, even while doing carnivore, to cut that out. Because over time, I realized how crappy it just made me feel and how hungry it kept making me. And that took years, even while doing carnivore, right? But it gave me options to figure out which way feels better and how to choose the one that eventually makes sense for me. Where like now, if I were to have a Coke Zero, one, I'm going to keep wanting to drink it. Two, it makes me have a headache. And three, it makes me hungrier. So I'm actually not accomplishing the fitness goals that I want because I just keep eating. And so, you know, it's like, it gives me, having carnivore, it gives me options because when I don't have carnivore, I don't feel like that. And then you can kind of compare that to the rest of your life. So then I can like troubleshoot and I'm like, all right, like, if I go outside today, how do I feel if I just give it like a little bit of time, like 20 minutes? Whereas before, I never made that a priority. So then I can kind of see the difference. And now I have options. I'm like, oh, wow. Like literally, I don't take really any medications hardly at all. But if I have like a headache or stomach ache, now my first instinct is like go outside and sit on the grass. And it works. That's the thing. It literally works. Or if I have too much caffeine, it's like, okay, like go on a run and get that out of your system or go lay on the grass. Like, again, options. So I think what's nice about it is that it's, no one's like rah, rah, carnivore, like everybody else sucks and you can't have a vegetable ever. And no one really actually, I don't think, cares. It's rather like giving perspective on how to approach life and get the results that we all want anyways, which is to look good and feel good and have a good life and be happy. Yeah, it can be really inexpensive too. You know?
Yeah, you know, it's a tool in the tool belt. And that's why I say, you know, I think it's empowering because now the predominant method, right, is like, I don't feel good. Okay, so, well, what should I do? I'm going to go to the doctors, right? And I'm going to go to the doctors and then he's going to run tests. And then he's going to say, yeah, you know what? Well, you can't sleep, so here's some Ambien, and you know your blood pressure is kind of high, so here's some of this, and you know genetically you're predisposed to this, so you know, and so you go through this synthetic process, and it's not about what you're deficient in; it's about all of these synthetic artificial means to mask your deficiencies so that you can feel better, and so you're going to this person. Right. And you're going to this expert, you're trusting the science and the lab coat and all this stuff. And you're listening to them and hey, they're obviously a doctor. I mean, if I can't sleep, I must be deficient in Ambien. Right. And then you do all this stuff versus if you have this tool in the tool belt, something that you can implement on your own, it doesn't have to be prescribed to you. Right. It's exactly like you stated. What happens is when you do that, you're like, wait a minute. I've been doing this for 30 days. Man, the first 2 weeks kind of sucked. It took me a little bit to get my gut back in balance and to get my sleep better and all these different things. But now I just made this slight change in 30 days. I'm really starting to feel good. Well, I wonder what would happen if I did this. I wonder what would happen if I took my shoes and socks off and stood in the grass for 10 or 15 minutes. You know, it gives you a greater perception, one, of your personal control of the decisions that you make and how you can continue to improve and get better and like push through these different ailments. Like for me, I didn't even know I had brain fog, you know? And
most of us don't.
Yeah, I chalked everything up. I'm going to be 50 this year, I think. Yeah, I'm going to be 50 this year. I lose track of time because I feel younger than I am. But so I'm going to be 50 and I'll just be like, man, getting old sucks. I walked into this room and I have no idea, what did I come in here for, you know? And then you do that whole thing and you do it for like years and you're like, man, I get like getting old is terrible, you know? And then you just start eating meat and then you're like, well, oh, wait a minute. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, I had brain fog. I didn't even know, you know, you would hear over and over again, like, oh, my brain fog went away. And I'm like, what are they talking about? I don't know what brain fog is. I don't, you know, and then when you have it, you don't even realize you have it and it goes away. You're like, oh, that's what brain fog is. Yeah, it's gone. And then all that does is like, oh, this is cool. Okay, so I got rid of the brain fog. You know, what if I implemented this? What if I implemented, you know, high impact resistance training or whatever you could? And it's kind of like the tipping point, you know, the carnivore lifestyle, what I've experienced and what other people that I've talked to have experienced. It's like this tipping point. Like it was the tool in the toolbox that made you recognize the fact that you have much more control over your health and well-being than you think you do. And this tool provides you the leverage and the mental clarity and the observation value. And in a very real way, I think that's what's really cool, that there aren't case studies yet. I would love to see real case studies and real science and real money invested into it. But everything is so anecdotal, it kind of almost pushes everybody to tweak and try. And, you know, cause like I'm not this like purist, you know, I have 400 fruit trees and I grow a lot of fruit, but you know, I'll mix in blueberries and figs and all these different things. So I'm not like super puritanical and I'm totally fine with experimenting. But you know, the point is you implement a tool to feel better. And then, oh, well, hey, if I can reintroduce things back into my diet and still feel great and still function at a high level, I mean, why wouldn't I do that? Like it's not about just like restricting to the point. It's not like this sadomasochistic thing. Like you're just trying to torture yourself. You know, it's, you want to feel optimal. You want to sleep better. And it's weird how it all kind of ties together. Like for me, it just I'm not saying, just like you were saying, this isn't like this be all to end all magic, perfect thing or anything, but I think what it is your body was designed to function optimally. Right. And so all we're doing is we're experiencing that realignment, like you were saying, with the gifts that God has given us and creation, and through this very incredibly simplified thing that really is more extracting and taking away from your diet more than it is adding to your diet, right? It's much more, in my opinion, an elimination, a way of eliminating harmful things in your diet put you in an optimal place so that you can say, make the personal decision, well, what can be in my diet, right? Rather than like, oh, well, that potato chip at the health food store that says it's healthy is, you know, fried in avocado oil. So, I mean, obviously that's got to be healthy because it says it on the package, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the things I really love the most about the whole carnivore lifestyle shift that's occurred is because it puts everything else into perspective. And what I mean by that is, you know, if there was like this whole thing going on where people were having the results that they're having with carnivore, no brain fog, the complete reduction or reversal of chronic disease, whatever it is, you know, it's really happening in a big way with carnivore, right? That's why it's catching so much attention. If that were happening with just a vegetarian diet, like it wouldn't be as big of a deal because it's obvious that like the messaging we've received for so many years is that veggies are good for you, too much meat is bad for you, and that's it. But it's actually flipped everything on its head. It's flipped the script completely. And that's why I think it's fascinating because when everything is flipped like that, it's like, well, I mean, for me, and I can speak only from my perspective, but growing up, red meat or meat in general would make you bulky and big, and it was possibly going to cause heart disease and, you know, all sorts of grout. It's so many other things that would happen. And that is what I learned. So I always ate salads. And that was my whole life until carnivore. And that's why it was so paradigm shifting, because it's like, oh, wait, hold on. So then you start looking at, it's almost for me, I started looking at everything else. It's like, what else is like kind of backwards here? So for me, before carnivore, actually, I realized that for me, drinking alcohol was not it. Like, that's not something I should do. And I want to be super clear, I don't think that alcohol should be similar to carnivore. Like, it's not like everybody should stop drinking. However, up until like 2 years ago, you were the weird one if you didn't drink alcohol. Like, as if we were just all born drinking alcohol and that it's weird if you had negative side effects to it. You know what I mean? Like, if you get sloppy and hungover, you're poisoned. But for some reason, people who stopped drinking were like, they were alcoholics or whatever. It's just like, it's backwards, like to each their own 100%. But like now it's shifting to where people are like, wait, I don't want to be hungover every weekend. Or like, it's actually causing dementia, I think, because of the sugar intake potentially. And now it's the shift that the script has flipped completely. And so we keep seeing these things, like, you know, even with, like you were saying with the apartments, where it's like, I live in an apartment. And I love living in the apartment, but I purposely spend a little extra money on my apartment to where I can live next to nature. Because before this, I used to spend 15 hours a day working on my computer, on my laptop, working all day, caffeinated, doing, you know, eating ultra processed foods, never eating meat, drinking on the weekends. And I was miserable and I didn't know it. I just, now I have options because I've done carnivore and I'm like, oh, wait, yeah, like it is weird to need to go to the doctor all the time and to get all these medications. It's flipped the script. It's like, why do we need that? You don't need that if you just do the things beforehand to take care of it. And you said you're going to be 50. You look great. Like, I'm sure this is something where you're even like seeing so many of your friends like expect to feel terrible as they age and expect things to be miserable. Like, I don't expect that at all. If I keep up strength training and I keep myself eating well and I have a strong community around me and I stay optimistic and positive, I don't expect any of that to founder. My dad is 81 in December. He looks like That's he great. Is your age. Yeah. He went to Dubai twice in the last year. It's like,
wow.
It doesn't have to be like that. That's just a story that we're told. It's profitable.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you brought up alcohol, because this is another, definitely a trend that you're seeing in the carnivore community and the carnivore lifestyle, is that carnivores are drawing attention to this. I just saw a great interview. It was on Diary of a CEO. It was Dr. Sarah Wakeman. And she's like a substance abuse doctor. She got big credentials like Harvard or something. But basically the entire interview was about alcohol. And she was kind of breaking it down about all of the incredibly negative side effects like dementia, different types of diseases. And then she was breaking down the ounces of what is when taken into consideration of these different negative effects like Alzheimer's and negative impact on the body, like moderate was like incredibly small, like I don't know, 2 or 4 ounces. And it's a very, very interesting interview. And that completely flips all of these notions of alcohol on their head where, you know, oh, it's actually good for you because of the phytonutrients in the grapes, and it's gonna, right. You know, it helps you sleep and all this stuff.
Like, well, just eat a grape.
Exactly. It helps you sleep because it's sedating you. It's not helping you sleep. It's a barbiturate. It's making you groggy and drowsy, which is why, you know, you're hungover and you feel terrible, because it's that type. It's not benefiting you in any way, you know?
I would say to that point, like, women, moms, you can look at it from a sales perspective too, right? Like, who would you imagine is most likely to drink wine? It's probably moms, right? Like, most likely older, not old, but like in their 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever, moms, or girls' night, women's girls' night out thing. Like, it's really not marketed to men. But what would you say is more of a manly drink? Probably something like, I don't know, I have one or two. I would probably say scotch.
Sure. Yeah. Hard liquor. Yeah.
Hard liquor, right? Like, scotch is pretty. Like, the reason that we can both agree on that is because of branding.
Yeah.
That is sales. There's nothing inherently substantive about the product itself that is for women or for men. But that's just a really clear example, in my opinion, of like, for some reason, we all kind of know scotch is a little bit more for dudes, and wine is more frequently seen with women, wine nights, those kinds of things, because we're so conditioned by marketing, by sales, by advertising. It's just targeting people. And I know this is obvious, right? This isn't like brand new rocket science, people. But when you take that and piece it out of your own life, and you're like, holy crap, like the food that I see at the grocery store, the stuff in the aisles, the way that we've been thinking about meat and the way that salads and all that stuff has been considered good and meat has been bad. And it really just come to one's own conclusions, I think, but it at least think for yourself on it at the bare minimum, like come to your own conclusions, you know, with that kind of critical thinking.
Yeah. And the other great illustration of the grocery store, right? I mean, now I'm almost 50. So, I mean, I've been around since the mid to late 70s, and in addition to all the prepackaged, highly processed foods that are now 90% of these like mega gigantic grocery stores with 57 varieties of everything, is now the liquor section of the grocery store is like unbelievable, like to the point where, and I don't drink and I never have drunk. But we have history in our family. I mean, I have several family members that quite literally have drunk themselves to death. So, I am like fascinated when you go into this grocery store and I'm like, I'm counting the aisles. I'm like, 1/3 of this grocery store is booze. Like, that's kind of wild when you think about it. And then when you think about the 90% of the rest of it is prepackaged, ultra processed, whatever, you know, and that's what's funny. I mean, we're not even talking about vegetables, right? We're talking about just like this artificial stuff, man. And this is like what the options that we have. This is what's for dinner, you know?
Yeah.
And what is all that? That is all marketing. I mean, that's all marketing.
Mm-hmm. It's all marketing. And that's where I think the cool part of carnivore is just, it gives us options. It really does. So it's like you said it best before, like we really can create our own world, our own reality. It's cheesy sounding, but it's true. I mean, it's like, gosh, you can. And the funny thing about it all too is there's no like conspiracy that we have to go into with all of this, really, at the end of the day, it really is supply and demand. So like, it's just the things that are being created by entrepreneurs who want to make money and sell a thing. And so they make it kind of addictive because then it'll sell more. And there's really honestly nothing super inherently wrong with that. But what we don't realize is that when they put the calories and the carbs and all of that on the labels, it's designed for one serving size. You know, that's the consumption of your, so for one serving, but it's contradictory because they literally have food scientists designing it to make it addicting. They do know it's not really going to be one serving size that you're going to consume, but that's up to you, the consumer, to make your own decisions. So for me, it's like, okay, knowing that that is the reality, because it is, Cheetos took 27 scientists to create the Cheeto, not even kidding, 27 scientists. Knowing that that's the truth, I'm like, I just abstain from it for the most part because like I am going to be wanting to keep eating the whole bag. And so the way to like diminish this problem, to get rid of this problem, isn't to like push, I don't, in my opinion, to push against it and like say, you know, all these terrible things, like people shouldn't be able to sell that kind of stuff. It's rather just buy the other stuff and eat the other stuff. That's supply and demand. With greater demand comes greater supply. And so we literally have the power to completely change this. It's just being aware of the options. And so if you've never had the option to not eat ultra processed foods or not know what it's like to feel full with meat, Now there's an option. And so then it's up to us, I think, to pick and select what makes sense.
And that's the beauty of it. And that is why it is empowering, right? Because it's not like, you know what we need to do? We need to vote for somebody and we need to make America healthy again. And you know what they need to do? They need to make red dye 50 illegal, you know? And is some of that stuff good? Yes. Is awareness good? Is education good? Yes. But you do have the ability to control what you put in your mouth, you know? And that is like so empowering. We don't need to lobby anybody. We don't need to vote for anybody. We don't need to wait for somebody else to have solutions, right? We have our own solutions, and you can today make the decision and say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to try that. Any honest person can do anything for 30 days. You can try it for 30 days. And if it works, and it was exactly like you were saying, you know, this isn't a grand conspiracy because, you know, the reality of what most people do is exclusively out of convenience, you know? Yes. And the reason all that other stuff works is because you can put $1.50 in a vending machine and a Snicker bar comes out, right? And you think, well, I'm hungry. Well, I was hungry, you know? And one, you're assuming that you need to eat it all because, I mean, fasting is great for you. So, well, you know, I was hungry. So I bought the Snickers bar, I ate it, and then I wasn't hungry for 5 minutes or whatever, you know? And the problem is you're going off of so many assumptions that are absolutely false, you know? And these exact same concepts can be applied to money. You know, we live in this Keynesian debt-based economy, right? That's contrived by these bankers that put zeros on paper and create a fiat currency out of thin air, right? And because of that, yeah, I'm an Austrian economist. Like, in my opinion, you know, capitalism is dead because capital kind of doesn't exist anymore because we're in this debt-based system. And you can correlate that directly to our food. You know, we've taken nutrition. It's not about nutrition and it's not about a nutrient dense thing like red meat, but it's about marketing. It's about packaging. It's about convenience. It's about on the go. It's very easy to grab. It's cheap, you know? And well, okay, it did cost you $1.50, but you know, the reason you needed the triple bypass that cost $150,000 is because you ate the conveniently cheap $1.50 Snickers bar.
Yep. No cutting corners in this life, unfortunately.
Yeah. And me and Dr. Kiltz, we were talking about it last night, right? Choose your hard. Like, you can choose your hard. Like, well, yeah, but that would be hard. You know, that would, that, that's got to be boring, right? Like, so all you do is eat meat and animal-based stuff. Like, how do you do that? That's so boring. And that must be hard. Well, you know, you can use a little discipline. And honestly, I think one of the most revolutionary things for me is it's not that hard. Like, I'm not hungry. Not only am I not hungry, you know, before I ate animal-based, I would fast and different things, and it was hard because I was stinking hungry. I mean, now that I'm animal-based, I can fast for a couple days, and it is easy. Like, I'm not hungry. And
I'm on I'm 1.5 right now, actually.
Yeah.
1.5 days.
When it comes to, like, fasting, like, what kind of what's your modality on it? Like, do you do it for a scheduled set given period of time? Or do you just, like, when you feel like you want to tweak things, you just kind of throw it in there? Or
yeah, I mean, right now I'm in the process of trying to lean out a little bit, and it's just summertime, so I don't know. I've been doing like it just depends. Like, I did it almost by accident last week because I just was full. I was at this conference and it just kind of happened. But, you know, I think too much is too much. I've been lately like once every 2 weeks for a day or something like that. The longest I've ever done is 7-day fast. I just wanted to see if I could do it. Yeah, I mean, I don't really think that there's anything so regimented for what I do anymore. Rather, I kind of let the intuition of my body tell me, which is really so cheesy sounding. And I used to hate when people said that. And now I really get it. I'm like, oh, when you actually give it real things, like for me, I know now, I know when I haven't had enough fat, either butter or animal fat. I know it feels a certain way. And I'm like ravenous. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But before I would just think that it was like sugar or something. But now I know. I mean, it happened to me the other day. It's one of the reasons I'm fasting. I ate too much food because there's a butter shortage in my area, believe it or not, like Kerrygold butter. So I came back from this conference and I was like gone all week and I had no meat. Like my friend picked up food from the farmer's market for me because it's on Sundays only. And it was Monday that I was going back. And anyways, I was like, okay, I'm dying. I was traveling all day. I'm like, I'm so hungry. I just needed butter, like, or animal fat. And I had nothing in the fridge. Everything was shut 9 at night. Everywhere there was no butter at all. And so I'm like dying. The next day I wake up, still no butter. I'm looking and I realized later that it was a shortage, but I ended up overeating on a lot of stuff. I wasn't actually that hungry. I just needed the fat. And now I know what that feels like. And so like, oh, you know. And so, it's like really once you figure out the triggers, I just don't need to manufacture the fasting too much. It just kind of naturally does its thing, you know?
Yeah, it's another tool in the tool belt, right? And when your body says, yeah, you should probably do this, like you just, and you do, you because you are feeling optimal, you now realize when you don't feel optimal and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, and you know, and that's why, you know, just like the fat thing, I can totally, cause you know, I eat a lot of steaks. We have our own cows. We raise our own cows and process them. And like the leaner steaks, I know I need to eat about 1.5 to 2 pounds a day. And sometimes if I eat some leaner steaks, I am not hungry. Like I'm totally not hungry, but I'm like, I know that I need more fat, you know. I'm like, man, those steaks were just too lean. I had lean steaks like 2 days in a row and I just know that I need more fat. And isn't that how it should be? Like we were created this way and why would God not give us like the wisdom to know, you know, we shouldn't have to go to some guy in a white lab coat that looks incredibly sickly and has lots of his own ailments, and he's going to prescribe us some synthetic something out of a bottle. I mean, we should kind of, one, know our body and what we're feeling and also know the solution to that. And that's what I've experienced is like, as you continue to optimize your diet, you're just extra sensitive to these things and you can spot it kind of immediately. And you also know, oh, you know what? When I do this, that doesn't happen. So then the next time that happens, I do this, you know, and it gives you more tools in the tool belt so that you can care for yourself, right? And be your own healthcare provider.
No, I'm totally with you. Subtraction. And then you can actually feel what a signal feels like.
Yeah, this has been a great conversation, Lauren. If people want to find more information like your podcast and these awesome interviews and debates that you're having on your social medias, where's the best place for folks to find you?
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is great. Really good conversation. I think we share a lot of perspectives. So just appreciate you bringing me on. And yeah, if anybody wants to follow what I like to talk about, what I like to do, where I like to kind of showcase my world, if you will, my channel is just simply my name. It's Lauren Knight Hughes. And that's just on YouTube. I'm on Instagram there as well.
Lauren, in closing, do you have any parting thoughts that you want to leave with people?
You know, I think that something that has served me well in my life that was reflected back to me recently by one of my best friends was they mentioned that both of us have never really been people to be really kind of in the crowd or part of the group, you know? So I've never been one to drink the Kool-Aid. Let's just say that. And I don't know why that is. I just haven't been. It's always the way I've been. But in a way, I kind of think it serves me because I love the people drinking the Kool-Aid and I'm homies with the people who aren't. And so I get to see kind of different perspectives. And what happens, I think, with groups, whether it's carnivore or meat-based or vegan or vegetarian or this political party or that political party, in my view, is that because it's a group, it becomes like groupthink. And then there's this forgetfulness to, like, the point of a lot of life is to explore and expand. And, you know, like with science, we want to prove ourselves wrong as we continue to learn new things. It's good to be wrong eventually to figure out and evolve. And so anyways, I think what I'm trying to say is it's valuable to be able to think for oneself and to be able to always want to, in a sense, prove yourself wrong. And there shouldn't be shame on that. People get canceled in society for changing their opinion or something like that. And that's bizarre. You get, if we find out that carnivore isn't the way, that's okay. Like if it's just like, it shouldn't be 100% carnivore, like that's okay. It's closer than where we were. So I kind of think that's the thing is like, I don't know. I used to not like that I was that way, but I've come to really appreciate it about myself because I think it gives me critical thinking skills. So I'd say like think for oneself. And that's something that is, I think, one of the more powerful things that we could all do.
That is awesome advice. We've always trained our children, observe the masses and do the opposite. Observe the masses and do the opposite because, you know, you got to be able to think for yourself. You got to be able to stand on your own two feet. You got to know what you believe and being able to explain it to other people. And that doesn't mean they have to agree with you, right? But you should know what you believe and be able to explain it. And you kind of only truly know it to the extent that you can explain it or teach it to somebody else. And I mean, that's just such incredible advice. And I appreciate the time you've invested here. And I will link the information to your channel down below. Thank you so much for investing some of your time with us and imparting your experience and your wisdom and knowledge from all that. And we love and appreciate y'all. This is a value for value proposition, y'all. If you appreciate what we do, please go on over to thetexasboys.com and we'll see y'all on the next show. Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you. Thank you again.